Okay, thank you. The title is here, I mean, I can see it. It says that the title is Two Quantum Groups is Locally Compact Quantum Groups. And what is a locally compact quantum group then? Then it was told here. I will try to recall only. So you have a pair, a sister algebra, and a morphism that acts from A into A tensor A, which is co-associative and satisfies certain axioms that were listed by Kustermans and Weiss that distinguish quantum groups from quantum semigroups. It's very easy to say what is a quantum semigroup. It's much more difficult to say what is a quantum group, and Kustermans and Weiss does it. And when you deal with non-compact quantum groups, then you have always problems of analytic nature, namely, for example, with finite dimensional representations. I mean, usually finite dimensional representation, say this one, this is two-dimensional representation, is a matrix, 2x2 matrix with entries that belong to the algebra, such that when you apply delta co-multiplication delta to each of matrix elements, what you get, say delta of alpha is alpha tensor alpha times beta tensor gamma. You just multiply first row by first column, replacing usual multiplication by tensor. This is what is denoted by this symbol, which is a sort of reversed T in a circle. And the main problem, well, one of the origin of trouble is that when you deal with groups like SL2R, then those quantities here are not bounded. And then you are not allowed to say that these are elements of the algebra, because algebra contains only bounded elements. So you have to develop a concept of unbounded elements affiliated to sister algebra. This is something similar that was done by von Neumann in the context of W star algebras, but it's something of that type, but essentially different. But it was done by Bajz, and the notation is the following. I'm not going to explain in detail this notion. I will write eta to, this is the von Neumann notation, to say that T is affiliated with A, and I also will denote by A eta the set of all affiliated elements. And then you may think that T is an unbounded multiplier. In particular, if T is bounded, that then T belongs to the multiplier algebra of A. Okay, now look, there is another problem. If I'm going to deal with the group of the type, say, SGL, to R, it means that I will assume that matrix elements are self-adjoint. Now, for unbounded operators, its self-adjointness is not a simple property. One should make a clear distinction between self-adjoint elements and symmetric elements. And this is very important because, for example, what you can easily see is that this thing here is symmetric. Even if you know that alpha, beta, and gamma are self-adjoint, the only thing you may conclude is that this is a symmetric operator. And the problem whether it's self-adjoint or not is sometimes quite difficult. So let me start. I mean, I'm going to pass through technical details first, and then to start to talk about quantum groups. So let me just make a comment on relations between symmetric and self-adjoint operators. Namely, in all cases that I will have to deal with, symmetric operators, when they appear, have this property that they anti-commute with a certain involutive unitary operator. So I will have the situation that when I have a symmetric operator and unitary self-adjoint, which means that rho square is 1, and such that rho anti-commutes with Q, then one can choose in a canonical way self-adjoint extension, and this way is described here. Namely, you consider the set of elements in the domain of the adjoint operator, I mean the adjoint is larger than Q, such that when you take this thing here, then you are in the domain of Q. And this, it turns out that when you restrict Q star to this domain, then you get self-adjoint operator. And it will be denoted in that way, and this is an extension of Q. It's a self-adjoint extension of Q. And I will use this notation. And as an example of this situation, let me present the following result that deals with two operators that satisfy Zakrzewski commutation relation. What's that? I mean, in quantum groups you very often have to deal with relations of that form, where two operators do commute up to a number. And now, if they are self-adjoint, that the number must be of modulus 1, so it's of the form e to the minus I h-bar, when h-bar is a real number, and for some technical reasons, I will assume that h-bar is in this interval.
Pi over 2, that's one.
Sorry?
Pi over 2. Don't you mean pi over 2?
No. Just 1 over 2.
Yes.
No, you are right, pi over 2.
Yes.
But pi over 2 is, well, less restrictive, but still. Okay, and now you see, this relation is not easy to treat on the level of operators on the Hilbert space, because those operators are certainly unbounded. So you have to somehow to translate this relation in terms that are well defined for unbounded operators. And to this end, let me assume that the kernel of S is trivial, and then, well, I will define something that I call Zakrzewski relation with the constant h-bar. I will say that the two operators remain in Zakrzewski relation if, first of all, sine of S commutes with R, and secondly, when I take imaginary power of the modulus of S, those are unitary operators, then when I transform R with this unitary operator, I just scale R by this number. And notice that if you put lambda equal to minus I, you formally will get this relation here with Q equal to that. So this is something that will replace this algebraic relation, which is not well understood in the case of unbounded operators. And then let me quote a theorem that is here, that if I have two self-adjoint operators that are in Zakrzewski relation, and I have a unitary self-adjoint operator that commutes with R and S, then such a combination is self-adjoint, well, essentially self-adjoint, but I always perform automatic closure of all operators that are not closed. So after closure, it's self-adjoint. And But not, but, okay, and then I consider the sum, and the sum is never self-adjoint. It's symmetric but not self-adjoint, but you can take this self-adjoint extension that was described on the previous slide, and then it can be expressed in, say, analytical way, as such an expression. T is this operator, and G, H is a special function that will be shown on the next slide. It's maybe look quite awfully, but I would like to just to show it, just to present what kind of mathematics is behind. So the special function G that entered the previous formula is defined in this way. It's a function of two variables, because I had operator T and operator rho. T was self-adjoint, so I have to consider R real, and rho was a unitary self-adjoint, which means that I have to consider rho equal plus minus 1. And the definition is the following. There is a special function V theta, which is by definition a meromorphic function on C such that for all x in this strip, the function is given by this formula, and on the rest of the complex plane you just perform a holomorphic continuation. Theta is just shorthand notation for this thing here. And well, you may ask where this formula comes from, and the answer is I just try to solve the equation that was on previous slide.
Can you return to the previous slide?
Sorry?
Can you return quickly to the previous slide?
Can you write
okay.
Notation?
Or put it on another.
Have a projector.
Can you put it on the?
Yeah. I guess you are interested in the theorem.
Yes, I am. Very helpful. Okay.
So this is the end of technical remarks. And now let me start with the outline of my talk. So I will start with quantum AX plus B group. I'm sorry. With quantum AX plus B group and its dual. And then I will use both. I will combine both, doing something that is called double group construction, which is a dual version of Drinfeld double. And as a result, what I will get is GLQ quantum GL2R group. And the main problem will be to explain why I believe that this is quantum GL2R group. And then factoring by a subgroup of diagonal matrices with multiple of identity, with positive multiple of identity, I will obtain SLQ2R. Well, you may think, why so complicated? Is it enough to take a subgroup? It's not really possible, because what turns out is that passing to a subgroup of unimodular matrices is not possible, because the determinant is not a central element, so you cannot assume simply that the determinant is 1. This is a relation that will imply a lot of others, and everything will collapse. So now I have to say what is a quantum AX plus B group, and that I will do making by a method of using some approximations. So in the first approximation, quantum AX plus B group is a pair H, is a pair B phi. B is a C-star algebra, H5 is a co-multiplication, and well, I assume that B is generated. Wait, this can be made in precise way. It's not easy, but by two elements A and B, just those that are here, and you assume that generators satisfy the following commutation relations. Here you have the Zakrzewski relation. And then co-multiplication is defined by this way. Well, this does not work, mainly because this operator here is not self-adjoint. It's symmetric but not self-adjoint, whereas phi, a morphism, should take self-adjoint elements into self-adjoint elements. So you have to do something. Well, you may try to take some self-adjoint extension of this. It turns out that self-adjoint extensions exist, but they are not affiliated with the B tensor B. There is no self-adjoint extension that is affiliated with B tensor B. So you have somehow to extend the B just by adding a new generator. So the new generator will be denoted by I beta B, and it's much easier to say what are the commutation relations that are satisfied by B. So B is self-adjoint unitary, and it commutes with A and anti-commutes with B. And then the formulas for, well, then it turns out that you can do this with the full success if and only if H is of this very special form. You remember what was done before was true for all possible H's in the interval 0 to pi. Now you have to assume that H is of a very special form. And when you do this, then you can repair the formula for phi of B in this way. You just take self-adjoint extension of that. But then you have also to say what is the action of co-multiplication on beta, on this extra generator. And then the right formula is here. This thing says how phi acts on beta. Well, but unfortunately, if I start with this group, I would not be able to define quantum GL2R group. I have to still have to perform some extension. So, in a sense, it was a simplification when I wrote that I use quantum AX plus B group. I use some group which is a little bit larger, and this is the, I will call it extended quantum AX plus B group, and then I add a new generator which is again unitary self-adjoint which commutes with A and B and anti-commutes with beta, and then well, it's a group-like element. So this is the quantum AX plus B group that I will use to perform the double group construction. So what is dual group? Well, it's very simple. I mean, it's as complicated as the original one, say. It will be denoted by H hat, with the sister algebra will be B hat, and co-multiplication phi hat. And then the algebra is the same. But I will denote generators by A hat, B hat, beta hat, and W hat just to make the distinction. And co-multiplication is almost the same. Namely, you have like that. It's opposite to phi. Which means, you remember phi of b was a tensor b plus b tensor 1, so you have to perform flip here and here, and also here, but here you symmetric elements, so nothing changes. And then the duality, well, when you have a group and the dual, then you have a bicharacter. Like, I mean, R is dual to R because you have a function e to the ikx. So similarly here, and this bicharacter is given by the following formula. Well, the function g was introduced before. Log is, well, everybody knows what is log. Chi is a bicharacter on the two-element abelian group, which is defined here. I mean, chi is of zz1. Z and z1 are plus minus 1. And it's minus 1 in this case and 1 in 3 other cases. And then this is by character, by what I mean, that when I apply phi to the second leg, then I will get W1, 2, W1, 3. When I apply phi hat to the first leg, I have this combination of V. And this is the leg numeric notation that is used. I believe that I need not to explain what it means. And then a slide on double group construction. So you start with a pair of quantum groups and with a bicharacter that is there. And then the double group is simply this one. Namely, what you do, you just, as an algebra, you take the tensor product of both algebras. And you twist a little bit a commultiplication. Namely, you take the tensor product of commultiplication and you twist with a sigma, where sigma is defined in the following simple way. V is the bicharacter. So graphically, it looks like that. I mean, I start with B and I end with B, tensor B. And the prescription is very simple. I apply phi to the first leg, phi hat to the second, and here I change the order using the morphism sigma. And when you compare this with Drinfeld double, then the difference is the following. In Drinfeld double, delta is just the tensor product of deltas. But this thing is much more complicated. Namely, well, in the first approximation, well, as a vector space, B is a tensor product of B and B hat. But the multiplication in this object here is defined in a quite complicated way, which is not well compatible with C-star algebra structure. I mean, you have somehow to fight at this point. When you perform this dual Drinfeld double construction, that then it entirely fits in the language of C-star algebras. Well, this is not a real complication because you just compose two morphisms, so it's something that is well defined. Well, and now it's a question. So I'm going, what I do, I just take this extended AX plus B group and I perform this double group construction. And the result is the product that I'm going to advertise here. So I'm going to show that it has something to do with, say, GL, with the quantum version of GL to R. To that aim, I have to find some two-dimensional representation of this group and show that matrix elements satisfy the relations that you expect to have. So let me just comment on the representations of the double group. Well, this is just there is a simple theorem that looks like that if you have a representation of the double, then you can restrict it. Well, you may use co-units on the algebra here and algebra here to define the restrictions, and then when you denote those restrictions by U and U hat, then it turns out that this must be representations of H and H hat, and then it turns out that when you apply sigma to all matrix elements of this thing, you should get matrix elements of that thing. And V itself is just this one. And other way, conversely, when you have two representations of H and H hat that satisfy this relation, and when you form this, you will get a representation of the of the double. Well, this is very simple statement, but it has this disadvantage that it requires that V is bounded. Well, when V is unbounded, I even do not know what means a representation. So I will use this as a guide we'll try to imitate something like that in the case of unbounded representation. So let me say what are the starting representations of U and of the group H and H bar, which means of AX plus extended AX plus B and its dual. So it's a representation of the extended AX plus B. I will take this matrix. Well, W is nothing which is dangerous because W was a group-like element. So this is W times the other two-dimensional representation. You can see that it's such a bad thing as a to the power 1/2. But this is because I want to have something that has, say, determinant equal to 1. A is also group-like element, so I could take A out, and then I'm left with the matrix, which is something like that. U is equal to A, B, 0, 1. And this is, in a sense, this is a representation, because when I compute U tensor U, you remember this operation means that I have to multiply to such two matrices, replacing the tensor product, the usual product, by the tensor. Then what I will get is A tensor A. Here I will get A tensor B plus B tensor 1, 0, 1. So I get the right formula for delta of B. Well, right with some approximation, because there is nothing is said about self-adjoint extensions. But still, it's something like that. So in some way, you may say that this is a two-dimensional representation of the AX plus B group, and similarly, this is the representation of the dual. You have a non-zero element in this corner because the co-multiplication is opposite to the one there. Well, and then let me compute those products. Namely, U times U hat. When you multiply those matrices, then you will get something like that. It contains very nice three elements and one which is quite bad because there is a sum. When you have sum, you should be sure that there will be a problem of self-adjoint extensions and so on. And the product in the opposite direction is here. It should be A here and 1/2. I'm sorry, my those pen that I got from the secretaries here are not very stable under
Rain.
So, and now what you expect is that when you apply sigma in that direction and sigma minus 1 in that direction, then it should move this into this and so on. Actually, what can be shown is that when you apply sigma to this thing, you will get that. When you apply sigma to this thing, you will get that. But when you apply, say, sigma to this one, you will get not precisely that, but some self-adjoint extension of this. And similarly, when you apply sigma minus 1 to this element, you will get some self-adjoint extension of that. So you have to modify those formulas, and the right modification is the following. It's here. This is what comes from computations. So instead of just sum, you have some self-adjoint extension with the reflection operator, which is written here. And then, okay, so let me denote, let me take this matrix, and my conjecture is that this will be the two-dimensional representation of the double. So I will denote the matrix in the following way. So with some extension, is just alpha, beta, gamma, delta. When I did this, I observed the conflict of notation. I tried to replace this by A, B, C, D, but again, A and B were sister algebras. So finally, I decided just to leave that and to work, because I mean the elements, matrix elements of the representation and reflection operator are essentially different objects, so there should be no problem. So what I have, so fundamental representation, will be this matrix, and okay, probably I should, I'm sorry, I showed too much. Will be just this matrix, okay, probably I have to put the previous slide on. So this alpha is this thing here, beta is this thing here, gamma is this thing here, and delta is this thing here. And then since I know what is co-multiplication, I may try to compute what is delta of those matrix elements. Well, and what we expect is something like that, because that should be a representation. But the actual formula is more complicated, namely, and now there will be a problem of finding the I think. Okay. Actually, what I have here, is this, and now there is a warning. I will denote the matrix element as blue beta and reflection operator as green beta. From now I keep this distinction. I mean, otherwise I would have to rewrite all my slides, and that was impossible because of the lack of time. So I have some reflection operators that I'm sorry, there are plenty of them, just five, but nevertheless, in a sense, this matrix is a representation of my quantum group, of the double. Now you may ask, what are the commutation relations that are satisfied by those elements alpha, beta, gamma, and delta? And the answer is on the next slide. Namely, alpha is in Zakrzewski relation with beta and gamma. Gamma is in Zakrzewski relation with delta, and beta is in Zakrzewski relation with delta. And gamma and beta strongly commute. So these are the relations that you usually write down when you consider such a group. If after all those elements are self-adjoint. And now there is a connection between alpha and delta. It turns out that alpha and delta are invertible. And this is the formula. So you see, when you multiply both sides by delta, move this on the other side, you see that determinant is 1. So it seems that actually what I constructed is SL to R group. Not this one, because the fundamental representation, the determinant is 1. But those elements alpha, beta, gamma, and delta do not generate the algebra. To generate the algebra, I have to add one more, not speaking about reflection operators that are on his own rights. I'm not able to discuss this now. You have this thing that is also affiliated with A and which is a group-like. So this is why I claim that the group which I constructed is GL to R, not SL to R. And now to pass to the GL to R, to SL to R, I have somehow to get rid of this determinant. And, okay, I'm well ahead with time.
But you said this determinant was not central, right?
It's not central. It does not commute with beta and gamma.
But is it normal? In some
it's self-adjoint.
I mean, if I multiply from the ring from the left or from the right, it's you get the same. You get the whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
localize at this element algebraically. Okay. You are already in the GL level. It's already invertible.
Okay. I would not like to risk any statement I'm not sure, so let me not answer to the question.
No.
So, okay, this is the last slide, namely, what about SL to R? So, as I told you, it's not it's not possible to do that just by imposing additional relation, saying just determinant is one. So instead to passing to a quotient algebra, I have to pass to a subalgebra. So I have to select a subalgebra which is generated by those things and reflection operator and prove that this thing is here. And then, well, it took me with some, I tried to do this for a long time, more or less 5 years, trying in each year, say, 1 or 2 weeks. And the point is the following. It seems that there is a very elegant method. Namely, the subalgebra can be defined as so-called Landstadt algebra of some C-star dynamical system. Namely, it's very easy to find a one-parameter automorphism group of the algebra A that leaves alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and those reflection operators invariant, and it scales determinant by some by e to the power t, where t is a coordinate here. So I have a dynamical system. Having dynamical system, I may consider the set of elements in the multiplier algebra that are invariant under the action of the system. Well, and then you have to add two conditions, because one is invariance, that were discovered by Landstadt in the 70s. And then you define the algebra A0 that is really generated by those things. And then having such a general construction, such a nice picture, it seems that you should be able to prove in full generality that whenever you have such a situation, then delta can be restricted to this Landstadt algebra. And what is easy to show is the invariance. And it's easy to show that when you multiply by this element that implements R, then you get an element in the algebra, not in multiplier. But there is also some continuity condition. And I was not able to prove it. So what to do? You may just work by force, just to take all generators, including those that involve the reflection operators, apply delta and just try to show that the result is when you want to. And this works, but this is completely, and very annoying, very boring, and very inelegant. I think I should stop at that. Since this is the last, lecture of this conference, I think we should express our gratitude to the organizers. It was very nice to meet here, and I learned quite a lot here. Thank you.